Hello, Internet, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your host, Joe.
I'm Ryan.
And today we're going to be talking about the Book of Boba Fett.
A quick message from Joe of the Future while I edit this podcast. I wanted to warn you up front, this episode contains major spoilers for the Book of Boba Fett, the entire series. We do our best to refrain from spoilers throughout our recording, but a few minor ones sneak through before the major points. And we don't give a long warning before diving into the biggest plot points, so maybe come back once you've seen the series. We also discuss plot points from The Mandalorian Season 2 finale and Rebels Season 4.
By the way, this is the first time I'm seeing this guy face-to-face in about 5 years.
I know. It's crazy. Wild. You have so much hair now.
I know. It's a pandemic look. Close Up is the name of the show, and we're going to start with an extreme long shot before getting up close. So I thought we could begin with talking about what does Star Wars mean to us? Where are we coming from here? Talking about the Book of Boba Fett. You want to start or should I start?
Sure, I'll start. So I basically grew up on Star Wars. My dad introduced it to me when I was very young. He introduced me to the originals, I think, before watching the prequels when they were coming out.
Oh, that's the proper order, of course.
It's the proper order. And then I was very young, but he very easily explained to me how prequels and originals worked. And then as the prequels were coming out, I was just obsessed with them as a kid. I think I remember bringing a DVD copy of Revenge of the Sith to a Mexico vacation with my family. I don't know how they let me watch it every night, but they did. So you could say that Star Wars is a big part in my life. My uncle is also a pretty big Star Wars fan, and we do talk about it sometimes, but I think I'm a little more obsessed than he is, but don't tell him that.
That's cool. For me, I was introduced to Star Wars pretty early on in my life. My mother was the one who introduced me. She grew up with it. And when she first watched it in the theater in 1977, she was blown away by it. It was a lifelong fandom for her because she never expected to like it so much. She expected to hate it, and she was grumbling the whole time going in. Well, so she introduced it to my brother and I, passed that love along. Star Wars is actually what got me into directing and filmmaking, because I remember when I was a kid, my brother used to love the Duel of the Fates sequence from Phantom Menace, and he would insist we watch that scene every single day for I don't know how many weeks on end. Not even the whole Phantom Menace, just the Duel of the Fates. And at a certain point, something kind of clicked in my brain when I was 7 years old watching that scene on repeat. And I'm like, oh, this is a really cool thing. I think I want to make movies and do stuff like this, you know, blow some kid's mind like me at 7 years old. So yeah, filmmaking, storytelling, that's really integral to my identity as I describe myself to people nowadays. So it's a really big part of my life that way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that brings us to Book of Boba Fett. We followed it all these years through highs and lows and disappointments and massive successes. And
I think our first connection with Star Wars is when we were back in university in the Winters building, shout out York.
Yeah.
And you and your roommate, you guys had lightsabers in your room.
And I
was geeking out.
We had the replicas. Yeah.
I know. And I was so jealous. I still haven't bought one, but I'm almost there.
Yeah, they're a little pricey, but they're worth it.
But it's worth it. Thankfully, this guy was cheaper. He's cheaper than a $200 lightsaber, but he just sits here. He's the homie.
I'm glad you got a prop. I was going to make a Lego Boba Fett head figure that I got a while back, but I never got around to making it. So
Legos are fun.
Worst part is he's a little hard, but that's okay.
Okay, so we're still on the extreme long shot. So what did a Boba Fett series mean to us? So after all these years in the Star Wars fandom, how did it feel when we heard Boba Fett was getting his own TV show?
I'm going to be 100% honest. I'm a fan, longtime fan of the originals, the prequels. I will defend some of the sequels, not a lot.
Mostly just Force Awakens.
Mostly.
and like sprinklings after that.
Yeah. I have never liked Boba Fett character. Shocker, I know. And it's blasphemous to say. Yeah. I will name off everything objective that he does in the originals. He puts a tracking device on the Millennium Falcon.
Very important.
And that's it. That's all he does. Some people say, well, he froze Han and Carbonite. Nope, that was Vader. It wasn't him. And it's how he was treated in the movies, more likely. Yes, I know there's books and comic books and all that. So I wasn't too excited when the show was coming out. I think I started watching it when the first two episodes aired. I didn't keep up with it weekly until episode 4, which I'm glad I did.
We're starting to get to that point of franchise saturation where even with all the shows coming out for whether it's Marvel, Star Wars, DC, what have you, we're getting to that point where I as a longtime fan of these things start feeling like I got to pick and choose now. I'm like, Boba Fett, do I really want to bother? It's Star Wars, but is it worth my time? I don't know.
I felt like there was going to be a show and I was worried about it. And when he did show up in the second season of Mandalorian, spoilers, but where have you been?
Yeah.
And they gave him some cool scenes and his fighting scenes and made his character pretty cool. It's like, okay, I understand why people like him. And he is a cool character. I'll give the show a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I was pretty similar. Boba Fett was never my favorite, but I was always into the expanded lore growing up. And I knew some of the old Legends Boba Fett stories. And I really liked the Mandalorian stuff, that he was a clone and the son of Jango Fett, this famed bounty hunter. I think the prequels did a lot to make me appreciate Boba Fett as a character. And I was really excited to see Temuera Morrison was coming back to play Boba Fett in live action, which was pretty nuts to me. It was like, oh, my childhood, but he's Boba Fett, so that's like not Jango. That's weird. Yeah, so I was hesitant, but mostly looking forward to it. And I really like the pitch that it was sort of a Godfather meets Star Wars sort of thing. Like, oh, Boba Fett's going gangster on Tatooine, taking over Jabba's crime operations. Okay, this seems like a pretty interesting premise. You got me hooked just from how it sounds. It sounds interesting. So that was our extreme long shot. Now we zoom into a medium shot. Like you were saying before, the Book of Boba Fett is from the brain of Jon Favreau, who co-created The Mandalorian with Dave Filoni, praise his name. He developed The Book of Boba Fett alongside Robert Rodriguez, was a main creative force behind the scenes, I think. And he's the one who did episode 6 of The Mandalorian season 2, where Boba Fett featured prominently. If you're here, you know who Boba Fett is. You probably know the deal. And we explained.
Yeah, to be clear, if you're here and you haven't watched the show yet, what are you doing? If you're here for support, we love it, but like, go watch the show and then come back. That's the fun of this.
And if for some reason you have no idea who Boba Fett is, just a brief recap. About 30 years before this series starts, you find out that Boba Fett's father was a famous bounty hunter. He belonged to a clan of armored warriors in the Star Wars universe called Mandalorians. The father, Jango Fett, ended up being employed by these cloning aliens named Kaminoans to take his DNA and create an army of guys who looked just like him, had his skills, which I guess he was just a genetic specimen. So this Jango Fett decided to get himself an unaltered clone to raise as a son, and that's Boba Fett. And spoilers for Attack of the Clones, if you haven't seen it, but once again, if you haven't, what are you doing here? Jango Fett was murdered in that movie, and Boba Fett had to take his armor. Fast forward about 20 years, he becomes one of the most feared mercenaries, bounty hunters in the galaxy. Works for the likes of Darth Vader. And now he's got his own show. So with all that background out of the way, we're into a close-up, name of the show, and let's go. We'll try to refrain from spoilers till later, but, well, we've already...
I make no promises.
We're already into it. So let's keep it going. I'd like to start with a quote. Penned down from the Twin Sons of Tatooine. We're now close on the mouth of the Sarlacc pit. After a beat, the gloved Mandalorian armor gauntlet of Boba Fett grabs onto the sand outside the Sarlacc pit, and the fear bounty hunter pulls himself from the maw of the sand beast, and we realize he survived his fall during the battle of Jabba's palace ship. Any fans of Parks and Recreation will know that's the famous speech delivered by Patton Oswalt. Predicted the show.
The fact that they went so meta with that is just, it's perfect. You can tell that there's just not only fans of Star Wars, but fans of Star Wars.
I heard that he did that scene as an improv.
Oh, wow.
He just said, talk about whatever you want. And he thought Star Wars. So he just sort of riffed on that. And that was 7 years ago. I don't know if they made the opening scene based on that or if it was completely incidental, but the fact that Parks and Rec, of all things, predicted the opening of this show was impressive.
Maybe someone, while they were writing it, they just had Parks and Rec on in the background. And they're like, that's a good idea.
Who knows? Maybe
you should write that.
Maybe Jon Favreau is a fan.
What they didn't take into account is I'm going to take a nap for about 2 days while I come out of the Sarlacc pit. Honestly, I don't blame them. I'd probably do the same thing.
It's an intense environment. Now that we've done all that setup, let's get into our first impressions. How did the series make us feel in the beginning, by the end? So for me, I was interested at the start. The first episode didn't blow me away, but it intrigued me. And it was very back and forth for most of the series, my opinion. I was really interested in some parts, less interested in others. The funniest part is that this was billed as a gangster series, and that was about only a third of the plot, and it was the least interesting part of the whole show. So I was way more interested in this Tusken Raider flashback sequence that took prominence in the first four episodes. That was a really interesting tonal shift. It was about spirituality and philosophy and this stoic badass Boba Fett learning to become a more well-rounded person. Although, as we'll cover later, I think they dropped the ball on that particular character arc. But I do appreciate that they were trying to turn him into a version of the character we weren't expecting. And I think that plot line also did a lot for Tusken culture. Before, we kind of see them mostly as these savage killers who enslave people on Tatooine and raid the villages. But now they're a distinct culture with their own traditions and background. And they were treated with respect in this show. And it made me open my eyes to see, oh, well, you know, maybe there is some corners of the Star Wars universe that have been neglected. And I like that we're doing a deep dive on stuff like this now.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming with the Tusken Raiders at all.
Yeah,
I didn't think they were going to be like treated with that type of respect. That's kind of why I don't hate on this series as much as other people are doing, because there are some elements that are just so different that you just wouldn't expect.
Yeah, I think we all kind of realized after that first episode that this show wasn't going to be for everybody. This wasn't a violent gangster epic with a lot of action and whatnot. This was a more slow burn series about more of a character study, which once again, I think they dropped the ball if the focus was supposed to be on character. You know, let's just kind of get into that. I think it dropped the ball with the focus on character because after those first few episodes, Boba Fett sort of took a backseat in his own show. There's two whole episodes of this show where he doesn't even have a word to say, and one whole episode he's not even in.
Mm-hmm.
And for a guy whose name's in the title, with only seven episodes in the season, mind you, that's not great.
No, it's not. And I've seen people try to make certain arguments like, oh, well, he already has so much backstory, he already has so much lore that you don't really need to have him in every single episode. But also, like, this is his show. It's his show. For people who don't read the comics, who don't plays in some video games who don't know any of the expanded lore.
If you thought his lore was enough going into this, then why even make a show?
Exactly. And also, like, you're doing a complete 180 on what people are expecting on character development. And when you only have 7 episodes and he's in about 5.1 of them.
And he doesn't even talk in one of them.
Exactly. It's not a good gamble. And there's too much focus on, I feel, on different characters like the mods, who are the biker gang with this cybernetic implants. One's got a scope, who I got to talk about later because he does the most ridiculous thing in the finale. I think I know what I'm saying.
But, I think I know where you're going, yeah.
And they're... My first impressions of the show is it's trying to do too much for how little time they have.
It's simultaneously trying to do too much, and also this series didn't need to be 7 episodes. You could have told the same plot in probably a 2-hour movie if you cut out some of the fat.
Yeah.
Like, sure. I know way back when Disney first bought Lucasfilm, the rumor was there was going to be a Boba Fett standalone film alongside Rogue One and Solo, A Star Wars Story. Boba Fett was going to be one of the movies, and I think Joss Trank was attached to that. But then after the Fan Four Stick debacle, I think, and he sort of went off the deep end. There was some controversies, I think, and they fired him. I think that's what happened, but I'm stretching my memory like 10 years now.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. It was all felt like it was almost yesterday.
So with the success of The Mandalorian, Temuera Morrison comes back. Oh, well, sure, miniseries on Disney Plus. Well, Disney Plus wasn't even a thing when they were first talking about a Boba Fett project. I don't know if it needed to be a miniseries.
Yeah, it's really odd because I'm really in between on this show. For, to me, I don't want to give my rating yet, but I did enjoy most of it. And I wasn't being too critical of it because my expectations going into it were pretty low because I didn't really care for the character.
Yep.
But other than that, you know, most of it I did enjoy. Were there some silly stuff and some parts were like a little boring? Yes, but basically the show is what it fails to do is heighten its main character. It does a great job of heightening the side characters like Finnick and Chrisanson, I'm saying his name wrong, the Wookiee bounty hunter, even freaking the Rancor keeper, Danny Trejo.
Yeah.
He gets a moment. But your side characters should elevate your main character as much as it elevates them. And the main character...
He kind of just lets...
Yeah, they drop the ball. They kind of just lets things happen and then he reacts to them.
What got me was they're setting up this redemption arc for him. Like, there were some lines a character throws in his face in the very last episode, and they talk about, oh, you're a cold-blooded killer. You were always a killer. You'll always be a cold-blooded killer, that sort of deal. And from what we know about Boba Fett, this is true. Darth Vader points him right in the face and says, no disintegrations. You know, this is a tough dude.
And he's like, okay.
But for this entire series, all we see is him making, well, I wrote about this elsewhere, but I think it's a good comparison to say that watching this show was like playing a Star Wars RPG and watching a fully light side playthrough. It's like, I didn't see the darkness in him at all.
Exactly. You're just clicking the, I haven't played a lot of Star Wars RPGs, but I play Mass Effect, and it's just choosing the good answer every time.
Just because.
That's what it felt like.
Just because you want to get that level up.
There were multiple moments in this show where people showed him disrespect, and he just let it slide because, oh, well, maybe I can use that later. Maybe I could, you know, show mercy. And I'm like, you know, what a real gangster in this position do this? Probably not.
No. Or he has Finnick kill him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can say he's playing the long game, and, you know, I'd understand, once again, with the RPG comparison, it just feels like I'm a gangster in this story, but I'm choosing the good playthrough just to say I did the good thing, not because it's what makes sense, but just because I didn't want my character to look bad.
Yeah. it just felt really weird. And I don't know if there was like budget restraint. Well, clearly there's no budget restraints. It's Disney. But if they have, hey, you only have this mini series and this is what we want to put in it. I don't know. We don't know what happened in the background of it. But with the time that they're given, I feel like they really just dropped the ball in terms of having Boba Fett have this redemption arc. Can you have Boba Fett have a redemption arc and be this neutral guy who wants to be a crime boss with no crime, which I don't really understand that, but you have to write it correctly and you have to direct it in a way where we understand that. No, I didn't understand till like the final episode where I was like, oh, he doesn't want crime at all. He just wants to be a boss.
Yeah. And I think that's one of my biggest problems with the series is that even if they kept things the exact way, the exact story they wrote, one of my biggest problems with it is that we didn't find out Boba Fett's character motivations till episode 4 is the first time he starts explaining to Fennec why he wants to be Daimyo of Tatooine, what he wants to do with that position. And like you were saying, even more in episode 7, why are episode 4 and episode 7 the episodes we're learning his whole motivation behind the plot? Isn't that something you should be learning from episode 1 to invest in this guy? Why do I care what he's doing if I don't know why he's doing it? And it's not even a compelling mystery to unfold. It's not like his motivations are some big reveal that totally change the context of the show. I can see if that would be compelling, but
right, yeah. I feel like half the creators wanted to do something else and then the other half wanted to do another thing. It's the whole thing with the sequels again where you have different directors being on set and being in control. Yes, is Jon Favreau writing most of them?
I think he wrote all of them.
But yeah, if he wrote all of them, then it's on him as well.
I think Dave Filoni co-wrote episode 6 with him, but I think he wrote the rest of them.
Yeah.
Which is even worse.
Which does suck. Jon Favreau, he's a very good writer, but he has had some misses, let's be honest. Certain films.
Iron Man 2, I'm going to call out, but that wasn't totally his fault.
Not totally his fault.
That was Marvel's fault for making him shoehorn too much in there. But who's to say Disney didn't do the same thing? I can see multiple aspects of this season where I'm like, okay, well, he was setting up a story for, well, Boba Fett and other side characters in Mandalorian season 2. And I can see how Disney was like, no, we don't really care for how you built out the world here. So
get more of this guy.
Yeah, a bit more of that. let's reverse
for this
backtrack
guy
a little bit. Forget what you were doing because the bottom line is certain things are profitable and you tried to get rid of them.
Yeah. So. I have 2 gripes with this series. They're really the only gripes that I have with them. And it's the character of Boba Fett does not feel the same as he did in the 2nd season of Mandalorian. Because at the very end, he literally just shoots Bib Fortuna in the face, throws him down off the throne, and doesn't say anything. That's the badass that people want. And then you come into this series, and he's like, I just want every crime lord, I want you to stay neutral. I'm not going to give you anything, but I just want you to stay neutral. Stay out of this fight. Just out of respect.
And didn't that work great for him?
That didn't work great out for him either. And it's not like you can't do that. You can do that, but it has to be written in a way where we understand why he wants to do that. And it has to be executed in a way that we can understand why he does that. He does have a lot of badass moments in this show.
Yeah.
Where he can be badass and he does murder a bunch of people. One of my favorite scenes in the show.
Yeah. With his ship riding in the, yeah.
Basically, my review of this show is it's a beautiful mess. If you're just going into it with high expectations, you're going to be disappointed with some of it. But if you're going into it with low expectations, just looking for something to watch on like a cool Friday afternoon, I'd say pop it in.
It's entertaining enough, sure.
Once every 5 years.
It's not a bad show. There's a lot worse shows out there. It's just, it's not what it promised itself to be.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're a Star Wars fan, you watch the movies, the TV shows, whatever. If you're a Star Wars fan, absolutely do watch it, at least episodes 5 and 6. But, you know, if you're just a casual person, never seen Star Wars in your life, oh, I just know the movies, I don't read the books, play the games, whatever, this is my first Star Wars TV show, eh, I don't know if it's for you.
No, this is definitely not a first. If you're trying to go into the series, this is not a first thing to
go into.
No.
Yeah. I should have clarified better, but yeah.
That's okay.
For sure. Now, I will say, going back to what you were saying before about him having badass moments, on the reverse of that, one thing I did like about this show was how vulnerable Boba Fett was as a character. Now, one of my main complaints about The Mandalorian is he wears literal plot armor. A lot of scenes in The Mandalorian feel like they don't have stakes when someone more vulnerable like Grogu isn't there, because the dude can literally walk into a hail of gunfire and he's just fine, like every time. But Boba Fett gets his ass kicked on multiple occasions in this show. He has to go into a Bacta tank, basically sleeps in a Bacta tank just to heal all his injuries up. Like, the guy is vulnerable. He's not as young as Din Djarin, and I guess maybe his armor is not as powerful, or maybe there's more gaps in it or something, or maybe it's just the way they wrote it.
I heard apparently it's not full Beskar is Bob's armor. Okay. I think it's like half and half.
It's impure. Okay.
The purity. It's his father's armor.
Whatever they did with him, he's more vulnerable, which adds more stakes, and I like that.
Mm-hmm.
If we're comparing to The Mandalorian, that is one thing it does do better.
Plus, how good must you feel coming out of a Bacta tank? You must feel so good coming out of that. Unless you're him and you have to do it, like, multiple times because his skin was just rotted. But you must feel excellent coming out of it.
Yeah, I want one. Would you want one like Boba Fett has where you sleep in it laying horizontal? Or would you want one more like Luke Skywalker in Empire Strikes Back where you're just like floating in the tank?
Oh, floating. Absolutely.
You want the floater?
I want to be on full display.
Perfect.
Also, I don't want to be lying down where, you know, a bounty hunter can just come in and open it up and then throw me on the ground.
Yeah, the vertical one is safer. Probably.
And it looks cooler.
For sure.
Shall we move on to some more, I guess, technical aspects of the show?
Yep, sure. Yeah, so on the whole, the filmmaking was adequate. Didn't blow me away. Didn't take me out of it too much, except for some scenes in the, I think it was the third episode and the seventh episode. Some of Robert Rodriguez's action, I hate to call him out, like the speeder bike chase and a lot of the action in episode 7.
Yes.
Which, okay, the action in episode 7 was, it was okay, but it went on too long. I didn't need a whole hour of wall-to-wall action.
It's weird because my opinion on Robert Rodriguez is he's a very half and half director, where it's like he's not terrible, but he's not that impressive.
I haven't seen his old movies. I hear they were pretty groundbreaking for, well, maybe not groundbreaking, but he used to be very inventive with action, and apparently he was like, that's where he got his start, was in gritty action movies, and that would have been on paper a perfect fit for Boba Fett. And he did a great job in episode 6 of Mandalorian season 2. I still remember vividly Boba killing all those stormtroopers with his gaffy stick, and like, that was a fantastic scene.
That was fantastic, yeah.
He didn't do anything like that in the Boba Fett.
No. And there's a, I don't want to spoil it just yet, but there's a scene where he has a final confrontation with a certain character, and this is more on the editing side of it, where it's really weird when he beats him up and the guy's on the ground, and there's a lot of like fade in and fade out cuts. I don't know if you noticed that.
I can't say I noticed it offhand, but if I rewatch it, I should.
I remember watching it being like, what are we doing? This show is known for having like some pretty good like one takes and like taking in the atmosphere. And when you have a bunch of cuts like that, it takes me out of it. You can't connect to the moment. That moment felt a little rushed to me. And it's disappointing because you know in a bit which character I'm talking about.
Yeah. Now, see, then there's other bits like, well, like you keep saying, you allude to your favorite action scene. And that was one of your favorite scenes of the whole show was, I think, in episode 4. There's this revenge sequence where, you know, with Boba Fett flying Slave One. And that's one of the most memorable sequences in the whole show. And there's also train heist from episode 2. Mm-hmm. I think it was. That was a very memorable scene as well. But the show wasn't very heavy on the action. There was, except for the last episode, which, like I said, went on too long. It's like they didn't do enough build up, so everything had to happen at the last minute.
No.
And most of it was just, okay, you know, I need me some character work and emotional investment. I can't just have an hour of wall-to-wall action. You know, I'm a defender of Man of Steel, but it's Man of Steel syndrome all over again. The whole back half of the movie is just one big action scene, and you lose something from that. As cool as it is.
At least there's some stakes in Man of Steel because people die in that movie, and no one dies in this.
True.
So I'll give Man of Steel that. I know people hated it. But listen, this is almost 10 years later, Man of Steel. Man of Steel's good. I like that movie. People can die. It's okay, DC fans.
People have come around on it. I like to put on record, I was always a defender of Man of Steel.
I love that movie. I'm sure we'll talk about DC in a later episode.
Yeah. There's a lot to say there. Maybe on one of our defending franchises episodes, but... gets a lot of unfair hate for some early missteps.
For sure.
Back to Boba Fett. I don't know if I call it good or bad exactly, but I noticed Jabba's palace felt a lot emptier if we're talking filmmaking stuff.
Yes.
Still. Maybe it was something they did differently with the set. Maybe it's because there's not as many alien creatures or music or liveliness or it's just compared to Return of the Jedi, Jabba's palace felt like a dead setting.
Booming.
It was booming.
It was booming with people.
Seemed like the place to be. But here, it's just two people.
And a robot.
Who's not a protocol droid. But then, later on, he can translate a little bit. So it doesn't make that much sense.
It's just kind of dead and lifeless. And
kind of like the show. I'm sorry. That's a little harsh.
Just say it like it is, man.
Oh, man.
So one other bit of CGI, I'm just, once again, touching around it. Don't want to get too far into spoilers, but there is one bit of CGI where it was very impressive to me. It was in episode 6, and they meet this character, and just the CGI work they did on that character is exceptional. Really, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like that. It's crazy.
I think it's phenomenal. There are some scenes where it's a little finicky.
It's a little fake.
But like way more impressive than what they have done previously. And there were some scenes where I was like, oh my God, this is perfect. They really put the time and the money into doing it. And I don't want to bring it up now, but they hired someone who did it on YouTube.
Who knew what they were doing.
The most famous guy to do it, and Disney hired him and was like, okay, we're gonna give you millions of dollars to make this perfect.
Really made a difference. I didn't know how much it would work, but it's honestly, I know this might sound like hyperbole, but I think it may be one of the best visual effects I've ever seen in something.
No, I would agree.
It's unbelievable. Moving on to our opinions on the general writing and story of the series. So in terms of structure, I know they didn't really go with the whole Godfather thing that the show was pitching itself as, but one thing I did find pretty Godfather-y in the very beginning was the split timelines thing. It reminds me of Godfather Part 2 with the rise of Vito Corleone in one timeline and Michael's reign as the Godfather in in the modern timeline. So with Boba as in the Tusken Raiders and Boba in Mos Espa, I got those similar vibes from that. And I think it was probably, I wouldn't be surprised if it was directly inspired from Godfather Part 2.
For sure. Yeah, it's just like, I can't bring it up yet, but episode 5 and 6 are probably some of the best Star Wars media that come out in recent years.
Agreed.
You could even put it up there of all time.
Agreed.
But in terms of just the Boba Fett stuff, it's almost like they didn't really know what they wanted to do with him, or they wanted to keep it a bit mystery. It's definitely more of a...
Yeah, the mystery wasn't really worth it if that's what they were going for.
No, it's definitely more of a visual media than it is trying to be an intellectual one.
True. And the visuals, well, like we were saying, they were hit or miss.
Yeah.
Some parts really good. Some parts, could have been a little more polished.
Yeah, but other than that, it's average. It's not too bad.
Now, the best part about Boba Fett as a character, I think, is his arc with the Tuskens. I think he got the most character development there. You know, he learned to be part of a tribe, and that gave him motivation for some of his actions later in the series after that plot line ended. That Tusken bit was, it arguably gave the best Boba Fett moments in the show, because I don't think he really did anything that noteworthy in his modern timeline as the daimyo.
No. It's funny because his most interesting like story arc is when he was with the Tusken Raiders, and that was the more interesting aspect where I kind of see where they were going for, where he learned respect from them and learned to get people's respect. But when you're trying to run a crime empire and have no crime whatsoever, it's not going to work out. Just not going to happen. But I can see what they were going for.
Yeah. Also, off that point, he's not just trying to be a crime lord with no crime, but he took over the top crime lord spot with no backup. Except for,
God, you're right,
one person.
Well, you don't need backup when you got Finnick Shand. Let's be clear.
She's a one-woman army.
She really is.
Let's talk about Finnick a little bit.
Yeah. We've talked about Boba Fett enough.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the main character, but there's other people too.
He's not really.
Yeah, so Fennec was a little disappointing to me too, to be honest, because...
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I had hoped that, you know, Boba was the main character of the show, and however they handled him, whatever. But I always thought Fennec was going to be, you know, his right-hand woman and the major supporting character of the show. And I feel like she was pretty much just like Boba Fett in the original trilogy. She stood around, looked cool, did some badass things, and dipped out. Like, she wasn't even in the last episode, really.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, if she's the major supporting character and even she barely got any... Yeah. The most character development she got was in the episode she was unconscious for most of it. In episode 4.
Yeah. Which was a decent episode.
Yeah, like, it was a good episode, but they didn't do enough to make her a stand. Like, the Bad Batch did more with her in one episode, into one 20-minute episode, than this 7-episode miniseries.
Yeah. Again, they had some weird focus on the show. I didn't know what they were going for. But I think her betrayal as just, like, the badass bounty hunter who doesn't really give two craps about anybody, and who always, like, try to defend Boba, who's loyal. I think it's interesting, but you can't really go I can't speak.
That's all they gave us.
That's all they really gave us.
So,
and we knew that already.
There's not much character development there, and we already knew, like, who she was, so there's not much growth in terms of that character, but it's not like they diminished who she was. I will say, though, giving her, like, the final kill at the end of the show was a little weird. I felt like that should have been Boba.
It bothered me more after the fact, not so much as I was watching it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things like that where I'm like, oh, yeah, it's fine.
And then you think about it.
wait a minute.
You're like, no, that doesn't work.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? The funny thing is, even though they dropped the ball on Boba and Fennec Shand, I thought they did okay introducing the new characters like the Mods and Chrysantin just in this series. What's her name? Like Garza Fwip. She ran the cantina.
The cantina? Yeah.
Yeah. Like some of the new characters, I'm like, okay, you know, I knew absolutely nothing about you. This is your first introductions actually, I think that Chrysantin had some comic books or something where he fought Obi-Wan.
Yeah, he's been around in like comics, like fighting Obi-Wan, but it's like diehard like comic book fans who know of him. And when he like came on screen, I was like, I recognize him. And you do have to look him up because you don't really know much about him. He's just an evil Wookiee. He's an evil Chewbacca, but he's also not. So it's not much.
He's got like brass knuckles.
He's got electric brass knuckles.
Yeah. Which are pretty badass.
Yeah.
I do like those.
But you know, there's some characters where they can just be simple and it's not terrible, but you know, it's just a lot.
I think that's why I liked him, because it was a simple premise that they pulled off as well as they could have. They didn't need a deep character arc for Chrysantin. He was just, well, like you said, evil Chewbacca. He was a brawler. He had some jobs to do, and that was it.
He had to get shit done, you know? It's the time of the Empire, you know? You gotta put food on the table, you know? Can't complain about your job. You gotta do what you gotta do.
You know what the most ironic thing is, I'm just realizing right now?
Yeah?
Is that this whole show, all the supporting characters are basically like Boba Fett was in the original trilogy. They're all stoic badasses who just do their jobs and get out and don't really have any development, but they look cool and they do a couple of cool things.
Except for some of the mods.
Yeah.
The one mod, the main girl, she's got the tiniest gun in the entire Star Wars universe. And they make a joke about it in the 7th episode. But it's just also like, why do you have that? You're going to take on a giant army with that? Sure, go for it.
It's not like she couldn't even afford it, because she's with... Boba has a lot of money. He did admit that.
Yeah.
So she didn't need to go in fighting with that.
Oh, that's another thing, too. Oh, I didn't want to go on a tangent, but he's like, I have plenty of credits. From where? Where are you getting this money? I don't understand. Maybe it was Bib Fortuna's stuff, but I don't know.
Now, off the top of my head, I'd say either it was Jabba's stock or Bib Fortuna's stock, or maybe even his own from being a legendary bounty hunter.
His dad's money.
Maybe. I mean, he probably had to get that somewhere.
True.
I mean, he's been in the business a long time, and he did take over from a really rich person. But also, I want to say that after Jabba fell, there probably would have been some chaos. And I don't know if Bib Fortuna could have held all that money. Just
no.
Because we see in the Mandalorian. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, because like we see in the Mandalorian, Tatooine kind of went to crap after Jabba. After Jabba died, the streets are abandoned. And I thought that was really cool in Mandalorian season one, coming back to Tatooine. And it's like, oh, after Jabba's gone, this place kind of went to crap. So,
yeah.
So I don't know if Bib could have maintained a safe with all that kind of money.
Well, there were some average characters / disappointing characters, and then there were amazing ones.
Let's get into spoilers now.
We're getting into spoilers. It's been long enough. You know it.
Let's just do it.
Mando's back!
Luke Skywalker, Mandalorian, Ahsoka Tano, Ken.
They're all there. So in episode 5, we get probably the best thing that Bryce Dallas Howard has directed in terms of Star Wars. I didn't even know it was her until the final credits popped up, and I screamed in joy, and I thought, holy crap, good for you.
Give this woman a movie.
I didn't know he was actually showing up. I thought they were just doing a little hint, and then that opening scene in episode 5 is just master filmmaking. It really is. He before even coming through like the doorway, you see his silhouette. It's almost like he knew people were going to scream when they saw his silhouette. And then and then he says his famous line, and then he does...
Take you in warm, or I can take you in cold.
Great line. And then he pulls out, you know, his darksaber. You know, he gets injured. That whole episode is just... It's amazing. And you see the character growth from season 1 to 2 to here, because, yes, he still believes in his Mandalorian ways and his, you know, his creed, like, this is the way, but... I sense a little bit of doubt in his own clan there, which his clan is 2 people. It's the Armorer and the big guy from season 1.
Yeah.
And she full on, we could do a whole episode in season 5 and 6, but I'm just trying to rush through it a bit. She full on asks him, have you ever taken off your mask? And he's so hesitant to say it that he does, because he knows what's going to happen. But he admits the truth, and he's excommunicated right away. He has nowhere to go. So where does he go to? Well, first, he goes to get a ship. Let's be clear. He goes to get a ship.
Ship. I love that ship. The N1 Starfighter is amazing.
Yeah, I didn't know they were going to pull it off. And the way the color coding that they did, it fits him very well. It was weird that they did like a 20-minute montage of them building the ship.
Don't even care.
In a Boba Fett show, but
just let it be.
I love it regardless. With one, I don't know her name, but she's a very weird character.
Amy Sedaris. I know the actor's name is like Amy Sedaris, but
Amy Sedaris. She does an okay job. I think she gets too much leeway of like improv funny lines, but
she's cartoonish.
That's a personal opinion. And then everyone gets a shocker in season 6 when we open to freaking Grogu sitting across from Luke Skywalker. Now you go.
Oh boy. So this is a little controversial, but I wasn't the biggest fan of episode 5 till about halfway through. I know that's like blasphemy now, probably, but my problem was great first opening scene, like you said. You know, really sucked me in. I'm like, oh wow, this is great. You know, Mandalorian. Like there was that there was that instrumental cue with his theme at the end of episode 4. And it's like, oh, well, they're probably bringing in Din Djarin. Cool. But about halfway through, I think it was maybe when he gets to Tatooine and then he's just hanging out with Amy Sedaris making a starship. I'm like, Boba Fett's not even going to be in this episode, is he?
Nope.
I'm like, this is just an episode of The Mandalorian.
I completely forgot. This is... Just small tangent. There's a BD unit that shows up, and I flipped my crap.
Yeah.
I lost it. It's from the game Fallen Order.
I wonder if it's that BD.
No, because he just says BD in the game. It's BD-1. So I don't think it's the same one. If it is, that's kind of weird. But
well, I mean, this is like, I don't know. It's like it's a while.
20 years? 15? Yeah.
It might be that one. I mean, like,
it might be, but
the R5 astromech droid from A New Hope ended up with her too. So
yeah, it's a different color scheme than like the original color scheme of the one in the game.
But once again, like that, there's precedent for that too. C-3PO changed colors between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. He went from
You can get a paint job in 5 years, anyway, or 15 years.
He went from like wires to silver to gold, and in a couple of years, so there is precedent for paint. For paint, even in the game, you could change his paint job.
Yeah, which I've done.
Yeah, so it might be him. And in which case, what the heck happened to Cal? Who knows? But that's
I think we all know. I think we all know what happened. He's dead. He's gotta be dead by this timeline.
Who even knows at this point, man? Because I remember back in 2008 when the Clone Wars movie first came out, and it's like, well, who the hell is Ahsoka Tano? Anakin never had an apprentice in Revenge of the Sith, so she's got to be dead by the time we get there, right? Well, no, because... So it's easy to say, yeah, Cal is probably for sure dead by this point, but also there is precedent for him. That's not...
true.
So I'm like, just based on my own experiences with Ahsoka, I'm like, I can't say that for certain.
And speaking of Ahsoka, she makes a quick little... Ben Kenobi cameo in episode 6. Talks to Din Djarin. Talks to Luke a bit. You know, she's definitely has that presence of, I don't know what her age is. She's definitely up there. I don't know what the age span for her race is, but she's up there. She's definitely the old, like, wise master.
I'm just doing some math in my head.
She's probably like 60, maybe 50 at least.
I want to say she was like 16, 17 when the Clone Wars ended. And then, yeah, like, and then like the originals were 20 years after that. So she was like 40 in Rebels.
Yeah.
And this is another 12 years after that. So she's like in her 50s crazy. Now, I guess.
And it's Rosario Dawson. I thought she did okay in season 2 of The Mandalorian, but this is where I finally was like, okay, she gets the character. She understands that she's a bit older and she's still got a bit of a snarky side to her. And when she says that line to Luke about, you're so much like your father, and Luke gives her that look because he still doesn't really know how to feel about that. I just think it's episode 6.
It's top tier.
It's top tier Star Wars. It's written by John. It's directed by Dave Filoni. Because he's got a couple characters in this episode that he helped create. So who else to direct it but him? I don't know if we should talk about him yet.
I just have a few more rants to go on a bit. Right. Okay, so going back a bit, I never finished what I was going to say about episode 5. So I did end up liking the episode once I realized, okay, it's a Mandalorian episode. My expectations have been flipped. So now I can enjoy it. And then episode 6 happened and I realized it was going to be pretty much the same thing. I'm like, okay, as someone who wants to enjoy the Book of Boba Fett, this is weird. But like you were saying, this is top tier Star Wars. What they did with it, I'm not going to complain about it much. Just, I can't complain about the episodes. Although it's weird how they did that in the context of the overall show. Now, just as a counterpoint to the Ahsoka meeting Luke thing, as much as I love that moment, I was admittedly disappointed that that moment means we're probably not going to get to see the moment they actually met. And I did want to see that. As glad as I am that we got that moment, that also means we're probably not going to get that other moment. And I'm like, I don't know.
That's true. That would have been interesting to see.
What would I take instead? Would you rather have this moment where they already know each other? Oh, you're a lot like your dad. Or would you rather have seen them met for the first time at their first meeting?
I don't, that's a good point. You know, I think it would have been fine with. I think it was handled decently here. And their first meeting would have been really cool to see. They might do that in the Ahsoka show. Who knows? Maybe. Or Mando season 3. Who knows if they have that even planned. But they do re-meetings, that's what I'll say, from past characters who know each other. Really weird in here.
Yeah.
And I want to say it, but I'm not going to say it yet.
I'll just go on one slight more tangent before we get to that thing. You're dying to say it. So I was reading, and maybe you knew this already, but Mark Hamill doesn't voice Luke Skywalker in this series, or even The Mandalorian. Apparently that's a computer-generated voice that they made in some software using some footage, audio recordings of Mark Hamill in the 70s and 80s, and they synthesized that. And as much as I love seeing Luke Skywalker, you know, like, he's building his new Jedi Order, that's like, this is the Luke Skywalker I always wanted to see post Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. Screw the Last Jedi. But it was weird to me hearing him speak, because as cool as it was, there was a part of me that's like, okay, his face looks good, but now his voice sounds a little strange to me. Like, is Mark Hamill phoning it in or what?
I thought they were doing, because I think they did credit him in the credits saying it was him.
I mean, but it was his voice they synthesized. So, like, yeah, technically so it was.
It technically was. I bet he tried his best, because he is an amazing voice actor. He tried to sound like a younger version of himself. And they definitely tried to pitch it up a little bit. And there's some parts where it's spot on, and there's some parts where it's a little finicky. But other than that, you know, and they do
it. I read that it was 100% synthesized, though. In Mandalorian, okay. In The Mandalorian as well, actually.
It did not sound good in The Mandalorian. I'll just say that.
Because it was 100% computerized, which is
very
strict. We're getting into this weird, uncanny alley place with actors now, where Mark Hamill wasn't even on set for this one. There's an actor playing him. His face is deep faked. We're pulling 40-year-old audio recordings of him to make his voice. And then they're also doing that with Peter Cushing and Carrie Fisher in Rogue One. And who knows what other movies are going to start doing this. We're getting into this place now where it's like, okay, it's dangerous. I'm starting to get freaked out now.
Very dangerous.
Because I'm like, yeah, if you can make a movie starring, I don't know, Humphrey Bogart or...
Oh, God.
Some famous actor from Hollywood past, or even, I don't know, young Tom Cruise when he's finally...
They bring Orson Welles back.
Orson Welles. Who else? Audrey Hepburn. Whatever. Yeah. We're starting to get to that point where people still know these legends' names, and...
Yeah.
It's that. Like, for example, if, let's say Boba Fett does get a season two, and maybe they'll want to go further. Maybe they'll want to reignite his rivalry with Han Solo. And in that case, do you age up Alden Ehrenreich, or do you just have a CGI version of Harrison Ford? They're probably just going to do CGI Harrison Ford at this point.
That's true.
Because they tried the recast direction, and that movie didn't do well, and people lose their freaking minds over deepfake Luke Skywalker, not even voiced by Mark Hamill. So forget Harrison Ford, who's way too expensive to bring on set, do voice recordings, and DH. Let's just hire a body stand-in that looks like him.
Just hire Sebastian Stan to do Luke Skywalker. It's what the fans want. It's what he wants. He kind of looks like him. Just do it.
I think we're past that point, man.
We are past it.
The CGI is so good now, they're not going to bother going back.
Yeah. The way they shot it was very smart, though, because there a lot of him talking is off screen. So they didn't want to, like, risk it. So that's what was smart about it. My camera's about to die, so that's cool. Again, I only have one battery.
Let's talk about the guy you want to talk about and wrap it up, maybe.
So the biggest character to come out of this is Cad Bane.
Yep.
Growing up with the prequels and the Clone Wars show, I lost it. As soon as he popped up on screen, way far back, you see the hat, you see his flaps, immediately my brain went to him. In his introduction, his little standoff against the Marshal, there's no music, it's perfectly directed, and he's just the same badass as he always been. He is what Boba should have been during the show. He is exactly what it is. There's some dialogue options dialogue lines between him and Boba that weren't really written very well, and I felt like they could have had a better back and forth a little bit, but him, his introduction, him coming back, and his maybe death? Maybe?
Maybe.
Because there's a beep on his little heart monitor when he gets stabbed at the very end. That's the weird editing I was talking about earlier.
I see.
But man, he's
a presence.
Great. He's a presence. He's old, but he's great.
He's old and still faster than Boba Fett, as he made a point of showing. I'm older, but I'm still faster than you. But I've got armor. Yes, you do, Boba. The thing about Cad Bane is I wish they brought him in very early on in the series.
Mm-hmm.
I think he should have been the show's main bat. Like, the Pikes are... they're okay. I get that they were sprawling all across Tatooine and they were causing trouble, and they set that up okay. But because they're this monolithic corporation, it's like fighting CGI robots or whatever. It's like, I don't have any investment in the Pikes as a group. But Cad Bane, as their spokesman, I would have liked to see that earlier, because it's like, oh, a guy I know, or who's at least way more charismatic than the rest of the Pikes. If you've never seen Cad Bane before, then that would make the threat feel way more real way earlier on if they could have done that.
100%.
And also, he has a rivalry with Boba Fett going back to apparently unfinished episodes of the Clone Wars. I've seen...
it's where he gets his dent.
Yeah, they end up in a shootout, and...
I honestly thought they were going to reference that and like make that canon, and they didn't. I was like, here's the perfect opportunity for.
But I think they kind of roughly did.
They like roughly did, but they didn't want to be like too on the nose with it.
But they clearly knew each other already.
Yeah,
because they had a history already, so that had to be it.
Yeah, I think there's like an episode where, in the Clone Wars, maybe where Cad Bane meets like young Boba Fett, but I don't know if that's true or not. I can't remember off the top of my head. I don't remember seeing it, but they do kind of roughly like. They don't want to be too on the nose of it, and I understand why they didn't want to be too on the nose of it, but it didn't feel. I don't know if authentic is the word, but
no, I see where you're coming from there. Authentic.
It didn't feel like gratifying enough.
Because they brought him in at the very last second. If they established this rivalry at the very start, I would have bought into it as like this epic thing at the end. But they're trying to play it like it's this epic rematch to a fight we never saw.
Mm-hmm.
So it does lose something because of that.
Yeah, I hope he comes back. But if he doesn't, I wouldn't be surprised. Because I think his send-off, Boba Fett killing Cad Bane is not a bad send-off for the character, but the way it was edited and the way it was kind of shot.
Like, oh, that's it.
That's it?
That's how he goes out?
Didn't feel great. So I can see him coming back, maybe in Mandalorian. That's basically all I have on characters. Except for, you know, the Marshal.
Oh, Calbanth, yeah.
Marshall being just the Marshall, just being, you know, charismatic guy, protecting Freetown.
Timothy Oliphant's awesome in that role.
Yeah.
He's just cool. And I'm glad they didn't kill him off.
No. Which was a weird end credit scene to have. It's almost just like, really? That's it?
Cyborg Vanth.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about Din Djarin at all yet. Kind of said he had a cool introduction, but we didn't talk about his character development at all.
I did a little bit. Not too much, though. When he was talking about taking the mask off or whatever, but...
You were telling me this the other day, but it might hurt Mandalorian Season 3 because he had so much to do here between finding Grogu and getting his next mission set up and everything in these three episodes of Boba Fett that when Mandalorian Season 3 comes out, for anybody who didn't see Book of Boba Fett, it's like, well, what the hell happened?
There's a new ship. They're back together. It's weird. And we didn't really talk about Grogu, but he does learn some things. And in the final battle, he not only helps fight the big droids that can't hit a target, can't hit anybody, helps calm down a certain animal.
Rancor.
That is running rampant. I don't really want to talk about season seven. I keep seeing seasons, but the final episode that much because there's just so much of just blatant action that happens.
That's all it is.
That's all it is.
And like a confrontation with Cad Bane, and you know, Grogu meets Din Djarin again, and that was a sweet moment. The hug.
I almost teared up.
Yeah, that was great.
That's what sucks about this because there's so much character development and great storytelling between Mando and Grogu, but it's not a great show.
They were the best part of the show that wasn't their show.
And if people ask me, should I watch Boba Fett, I would honestly just tell them, watch five, six, seven. That's it. Just for these two. And yes, Boba, like, they're a little standoff. Mando and Boba when they're fighting everybody and they're getting shot at. The action's really cool, but like you said, it is plot armor. And they do feel like, to them, it feels like they are getting hurt, like, a little bit.
They do get down on their knees, like, they are taking...
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm winded. And Boba Fett riding in on the Rancor, that was cool.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really set up that well, so... Overall, this series was... either beautiful, some of the best it was, or it was a huge mess. That's basically what I have to say for it.
Oh yeah, I also wanted to talk a bit about Luke Skywalker again and say that I'm not a huge fan of how they handled him making that choice with Grogu, saying, oh, you can have Yoda's lightsaber or you can have this chainmail armor that the Mandalorian gave you. I don't like that they made Luke give an ultimatum like that because... Yeah. Okay, well, first of all, it sets him more on the path of The Last Jedi, where he starts repeating the mistakes of the past and blah, blah, blah. I really don't like that story, because the whole point of Luke Skywalker was that, well, the Jedi in the prequels were dogmatic in their beliefs, and they believed attachment screwed you over and it would turn you to the dark side. But in the original trilogy, Luke proved that, you know, attachment to Leia and Han and even Anakin in the end, like, it was his attachments that saved the day in the end. Mm-hmm. And when Yoda told him, no, stay back and train, he went. And maybe that was a mistake at the time, but it was probably a good idea in the grand scheme, because it made him a more well-rounded person. Now, to see him make that kind of ultimatum, the person who basically raised you and that you're attached to, or the Jedi way, it makes Luke character look kind of dumb, because it's like he's regressing on lessons he should already know at this point.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, but I also feel like he is a little bit influenced by his teachings from Yoda, like he wants to respect Yoda, and also maybe Ahsoka said something to him, I think, about forming attachments or whatever, and how that can be dangerous. Like, he has some doubts about teaching Grogu. Like, he's not fully thinking, like, am I the best option for him? Or he's not confident in himself as a teacher, and you kind of see that. And I guess he's more afraid of, he's probably, you know, reading the books that was in the back, and he's trying to be respectful to the religion. And I think he knows the attachment stuff didn't work in the past, but I don't think he fully grasps that ideal until
way too late.
Until way too late. Until Last Jedi. And, you know, to be fair, if I was Grogu, I would take the chainmail, and then as I was leaving, I would take Yoda's lightsaber too. Because it'd be like, hey, no one else is going to use this. It's a toothpick. Who are you going to give that to? It's the tiny lightsaber, but maybe he'll get it later on. Who knows? Also, can we talk about Grogu's little pimp walk as he's walking out onto the battlefield? He had like a little like swagger to him.
Waddling in.
As he's waddling to the rank car, like, okay, buddy, you're going to chill out. But anyway.
Is he wearing a Mandalorian pendant? That's awesome.
He is.
I like that.
Apparently you can take it off, but it's not going to fit on anyone else's neck.
Okay, so I see what you're saying about Luke. I'm not sure I'm convinced still, but I see where you're coming from. I see where maybe Filoni and Favreau were coming from. Mm-hmm.
They have to tie it into the sequel somehow.
Unfortunately.
Unless.
Because you told me there's a theory.
A theory. I'll just cover that theory quickly, because my battery's dying on my laptop.
Oh, no.
So I guess we got to wrap up faster, but I'll go through it as fast as I can. So basically, and this is a spoiler for Rebels Season 4, if you haven't seen it, so skip ahead to, well, I'll throw in an audio cue for where to skip to. So, in Rebels Season 4, Ezra Bridger goes into the world between worlds and pulls out Ahsoka Tano from her fight from Darth Vader, right?
Yeah.
The thing about that is fans have figured out that the Star Wars timeline flows very differently depending on whether Ahsoka lived or Ahsoka died in that moment. If Ahsoka died, then she never would have met Din Djarin in Season 2 of The Mandalorian, and she never would have told him to go to that rock to where Grogu meditated, to call out to his own kind. If she never told him about that and Grogu never called out, Luke Skywalker never would have shown up to save everybody at the end of Mandalorian Season 2, and they probably would have died. Therefore, Moff Gideon would have stayed in possession of the Darksaber and of Grogu, and the future of the Mandalorians probably would have stayed scattered, dispersed, and just generally awful. Now, that's all happened if Ahsoka died. And there's also that bit about, in one of the Marvel comic books in Disney canon, they clearly say that Ben Solo was Luke Skywalker's first apprentice after Return of the Jedi. Clearly say that. And that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way when he took Grogu, because they're like, okay, is Disney contradicting their own canon? This makes no sense. Why would you say unequivocally Ben Solo was Luke Skywalker's first apprentice, but then, oh no, really it's Grogu? But then people kind of pointed it out and they're like, okay, well, in this timeline where Ahsoka lives, well, maybe Din Djarin's in possession of the Darksaber. Maybe he can reunite the Mandalorians. Maybe they'll be a force in the galaxy by the time the First Order comes by. Maybe Luke getting to teach Grogu will teach him his mistakes so that he doesn't mess up being Ben's teacher by the time Ben Solo is his apprentice. And maybe that'll save the Jedi Order. And like, so basically the ripple effect of Ahsoka living versus dying at the exact moment Ezra Bridger pulled her out of the world between worlds can create a ripple effect, which may overwrite the entire sequel trilogy if they play it out, just based on Disney's own canon, how they've contradicted themselves in that one moment of Ahsoka living versus dying. And maybe they're backtracking on it now. I don't know. Maybe Luke making that ultimatum and Grogu not choosing the Jedi way. Well, maybe we're playing through that. Maybe that's him learning from his mistake for next time. Maybe that is what happened. But I do find that theory compelling. So in this theory, basically, the sequels are set in an alternate timeline of Star Wars. They would still be canon, but not the only way the story has to go. And I do think I would not put it past Dave Filoni to do something like that.
For sure. I can see where you're coming from.
It's a very compelling theory.
I remember when that episode came out and I saw that. I was like, is Star Wars really doing time travel?
Exactly. And there's been no consequences of that thus far, other than we know Ahsoka lived. But wouldn't it be so cool if that one moment had a ripple effect through all of Star Wars that reverberated into the sequel trilogy? Oh, yeah. And also the other thing is, if Moff Gideon never got Grogu, well, then they never got to harvest his blood to make Snoke clones. Okay, so one more thing I wanted to cover.
Oh, man.
Did this show kill off Max Rebo and Figuren Dan? I haven't seen this
anywhere. I've read somewhere that they made it out.
Okay.
I read somewhere they made it out. If you guys don't know who that is, it's the band. It's the band from Jabba's Palace. It's the blue guy, and I think one of the
guys from the original Cantina and New Hope. Figuren Dan and the Modal Nodes and Max Rebo.
They're the only musical people in the Star Wars universe, except for the Ewoks. So I've read from a fan saying that they might have made it out. It's not conclusive.
I want to rewatch episode 7 because I think in episode 7, you see the burned out remains of the cantina where they make their base. And I think you see Garza Flip's body in the background, but I don't.
Maybe. I don't know.
You might see their bodies in the background and like, no, I shouldn't make that reference.
That ruins everything.
No, that's probably
too dark.
Too dark for a podcast. I'll tell you later.
Oh no.
Yeah. So if they're dead, that's a big blow to the musical side of Star Wars.
I don't think I can watch Star Wars again if they're dead.
I know. It's more sad than anything. Okay, so that'll do it for the first episode of Close Up. So basically, if you're a Star Wars fan, watch it. If you're not, 5, 6, and 7 for sure.
If you want to understand Mandalorian, you have to watch 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah. Okay. So on the whole, we like it. We not.
You know, for me, if I was going to give it a number, I'd give it probably like as a series as a whole, including the awesome episodes. It's like a 5 out of 10. It's just average. Like I wouldn't put it lower and I wouldn't put it that much higher.
I'd say worth a watch.
Worth
a watch if you're a Star Wars fan. Yeah.
It's just the series as a whole. There's no like flow to it. There's no like fluidity to it, but
it kind of bounces back and forth. Okay, I just got to wrap up real fast because my laptop's on the red here. So let's plug our socials here.
Well, you can follow me at Ryan Walker Official on TikTok and on Instagram. I do have a Twitter, but I don't really use it.
Okay. Well, I don't really use personal social media very much, but you can find further film discussion and entertainment reviews on thoughtplane.ca/articles. And if you'd be so kind, you can support Thought Plane Media on Patreon, link below. Also, be sure to leave us comments and reviews, as that's a big help. And how about clicking that like button if you enjoyed this? We hope to see you on the next close-up with Ryan and Joe. Till next time.